The jobs report today suggests we're becoming a nation of part-timers. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update. The U.S. economy added 242,000 new names to payrolls in February. That's a much stronger than expected outcome. Plus, December and January were revised upward as well. That's the headline you'll see repeated into the weekend, but probe deeper and a different picture emerges to help us with the nuance here. Let's turn to Christopher Lowe, the chief economist at FTN Financial in New York. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, David.
There's about 50,000 more jobs on those payrolls than the geniuses were expecting. That should add up to a very strong jobs report, but how do you see it?
Big gain, but on balance, these aren't very good jobs. That the average work week fell, average pay was down. When you look at the industries where the gains were the biggest, what we saw in February was a part-time hiring boom.
One can assume many of those people would have liked a full-time job.
Well, that's right. But this seems to be one of the challenges of our evolving economy. You know, as the gig economy takes off, the best opportunities are in places where efficiency is king.
Or what's on offer. But that really is telling. In other words, more names on payrolls, but maybe not 40-hour weeks, maybe not benefits.
Right. And that's why the big gains are in places like retail, leisure and hospitality. We also saw big gains in healthcare hiring. It's industries where they want more people working more shifts, avoiding things like health insurance, you know, a story we've been talking about for years, giving them the flexibility to better manage the workforce.
So given that, do you think we're closer to the next interest rate hike or not?
You know, you have to look at this and think the Fed has at least misjudged how tight the workforce is, because if there was a shortage of labor, you wouldn't see a huge gain in part-time. What you'd see is smaller gains in employment and bigger gains in earnings. And of course, what we saw this morning was just the opposite of that. So my sense is the Fed can read this report in its entirety and feel good about taking a break from hiking in March, perhaps in April as well. And we might not have to worry about another rate hike until the June Fed meeting.
All right, Christopher Lowe, FTN Financial. Thank you.
You're welcome.
That plus 242,000 figure is from counting payrolls in America. A parallel survey of households finds the unemployment rate in February holding steady at 4.9% at a time that the universe of people actively seeking work was expanding. Since our economic future is so bound up with China's, consider this. China's legislature convenes tomorrow in Beijing, and with it, a new Chinese buzzword has emerged as one answer to the economic troubles there. China's President Xi Jinping is embracing what is called supply-side reform, which has a kind of Reaganomics feel. Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz is on the line from Shanghai. Good morning, Rob.
Good morning, David.
So the full term used by the Chinese president is supply-side structural reform. Please explain.
You know, for the last few decades, China's economic growth was heavily fueled by the supply side. It was the workshop of the world. In the last 10 years, the workshop for itself, as it built trillions of dollars worth of infrastructure. China is now moving away from that model towards more of a consumer-led growth economy. And hundreds of state-owned companies that for decades provided this supply-side growth now have a lot less to do. So when Xi Jinping says supply-side reform, he's talking about shutting down many of these companies that have been bleeding money in recent years and cutting off state subsidies to them.
All right, so then it's a little bit ironic they're calling it supply side, because when I hear that term, I flash back to the band The Talking Heads, the 1980s, and Ronald Reagan and Margaret Thatcher.
I think there are some similarities here. I mean, just like Reaganomics, we're looking at potential cuts in government spending. Unlike America in the 1980s, there are 800 million workers in China, many who will be impacted by these types of supply-side reforms. Another challenge for President Xi is restoring investor confidence in the economy. Earlier this week, the ratings agency Moody's lowered its outlook on China from stable to negative, saying it was uncertain whether China was actually implementing economic reform. So whether or not the answer is supply-side reform, it's clear the rest of the world is hoping China will make some meaningful changes so that China's economy does, in fact, make the historic transition that it's been promising.
That's Marketplace's China Bureau Chief Rob Schmitz in Shanghai. Rob, thank you for the briefing.
Thanks, David.
How cheap is gas by you? In this context, it's all too easy to forget about more fuel-efficient technologies like hybrid cars, but federal researchers are playing a longer game and are working on getting advanced efficient technologies someday onto airplanes, which currently stream a trail of carbon dioxide across the sky. From Cleveland, Brian Bull explains.
I'm here at Cleveland Hopkins International Airport, where roughly 150 flights take off every day. Loud, gas-guzzling passenger jets that leave exhaust trails in their wake. But right next door at the NASA Glenn facility, there's research underway that'll change a lot of this.
We're trying to get a 737 to fly using electric motors.
That's Ralph Jansen, an engineer at NASA Glenn. He and his colleague, Cheryl Bowman, sit in a lab filled with monitors, gadgets, and wires. She says in 10 years, they hope to have a hybrid aircraft that carries 10 passengers. But it makes sense to aim high for a 737 that'll carry at least 10 dozen.
Because right now, those are the ones that have the highest usage, the highest fuel burn, so the highest economic impact on the country as a whole.
Picture a 737 with electric engines under each wing that also generate power for a fan built into the tail, and you've got the conceptual gist. Jansen says it would cut fuel consumption in passenger jets by 12%.
Which is particularly difficult because you need to make the electric parts very light and very efficient.
While there's still more work ahead, Bowman says there's a bit of a space race feel to it, given the global interest in hybrid tech.
Places like the European Union invest a lot of money in making Rolls-Royce aircraft engines out of Great Britain and Airbus based out of France into major competitors.
You might think that better fuel efficiency will save airlines money and therefore lower ticket prices. But airline industry analyst Robert W. Mann Jr., based in New York State, says those savings aren't necessarily passed on to the customer.
It's the marketplace that really drives fares, not so much the production costs. I mean, what we see today, for example, is despite much lower jet fuel costs, the marketplace is still commanding higher fares in some cases.
Still, jets that are quieter, more fuel efficient, and have fewer emissions than today's aircraft pack appeal. But to put an air brake to your enthusiasm, NASA says the earliest rollout for a hybrid passenger jet will be 20 to 30 years. So expect a significant delay before takeoff. In Cleveland, I'm Brian Bull for Marketplace.
And after silence for many quarters at first, a long list of brand-name tech companies has sided with Apple ahead of a key legal ruling on encryption. Government investigators want to get into an iPhone used by one of the San Bernardino mass murderers, but Apple doesn't want to weaken security on its phones. The deadline for Friends of the Court briefs has just passed, and Amazon, Cisco, Intel, Snapchat, among others, are worried about making it too easy for authorities to see into phones and cloud accounts. Even the UN Commission on Human Rights has filed a brief concern that this would give a gift to authoritarian regimes around the world. Families of victims filed briefs, including the opposing point that one does not enjoy the privacy to commit a crime. In New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Midday Update from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.